Hello and welcome to the 18th Embryology Podcast. And this is a podcast with a difference because Ree is still here, but she's geographically how many miles away?
I don't know.
Lots, over the Bristol.
Greetings all from Biddeford in North Devon.
A 5-hour drive or something different. But yes, we're using Skype to record this podcast together, so...
Fingers crossed it works. Hello to everyone in Swansea and the rest of the world, and hope you're all well.
Thanks for keeping involved, you honorary lecturer, you.
Yeah, not quite. We'll see how that's working out soon, actually.
Oh, really? Still need the paperwork.
Yeah. Funny how long these things take.
Oh, no, not really. Everything takes too long.
It hasn't stopped raining since we moved, pretty much. We had 1 week of half-decent weather, and, it's been rain, rain, rain.
Well, that sounds like Swansea and the rest of the UK, so don't feel too hard, don't they?
No, the one good thing about it is that the surf's been okay, and I'm not working yet, so, been surfing quite a lot.
How is Biddeford?
It's quite quaint, actually. It's nice. There are the odd bod people around, but, you know, fun to find them and, try not to stare, that kind of thing. Loads of pubs. So many pubs, it's unreal. It's a nice little place. We have a farmer's market every other weekend and things like that. It's good. It's working out pretty well.
Arr.
Yeah. A lot of trackers. Tractor trailer, combine baler.
Lovely. How far away is the beach?
I think approximately a 5-minute drive, 7 minutes if you get stuck behind a tractor. And that's just with her. It's nice. It's a nice long beach. And then it's got Saunton at the northern end of it. And then we're about 20 minutes, 25 minutes from Croyd. And then a little bit further from Willacombe and half an hour from Bude. So they're all fairly close.
Wow.
It was nice. It'd just be nice to have some weather to go and enjoy them a bit more now. We just tend to go to the beach for a surf and come straight back. But, you know, there we are.
Well, I looked at the long-range forecast. It looks like it's going to stay rainy for... Might be a bit better next week, but otherwise, it ain't no rain as far as we can see. It's so wet, I broke my winter bike in Easter. I snapped the seat tube. I thought, it's all right, I'll just have my summer bike and maybe I'll sort something out with my guards on in the winter. And it's August and I've had to go and buy a new bike to put my guards on it. I can't do without my guards any longer.
No, everything's getting so lucky. I tell you, the only thing that's got me through, like it being raining every day, is the Olympics. It's been wicked.
Because it looks hot there.
Yeah. Although that weather they had at the beginning was pretty harsh. Some of those... Yeah. Rainy, windy, stormy. The medal ceremony for one of the sailors, they just looked absolutely drenched. Like they could have found somewhere slightly better to do it, having spent the whole day on the water. They had to come back and get soaked while accepting their medals. But it was brilliant. Really enjoyed it, especially the 100 metres.
Oh, the men's 100 final. This is really
amazing. Absolutely. The guy's a legend.
Yeah, beautiful. How fast can he go?
He's just awesome.
Yeah, and when's he going to go faster next?
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. So that's basically what I've been doing since
Did you see for the opening ceremony, they fired some rockets in the air well away from Beijing to catch the rain before it got there, so it rained on another city instead?
No!
Yeah, I told Kim about that, and she said, why didn't they do that in South Wales? But yeah, they manipulated the weather a touch.
Goodness.
Yeah, apparently.
Sounds
like a good idea.
Nice little factoid there.
Mm. Yeah, there's an awful lot of Olympics to watch. I was watching women's BMX this morning. Didn't know that was in the Olympics. Very good.
I know, there are some random things. I've even watched a bit of archery and stuff like that. It's all good.
Archery's classic.
It's all good. Anyway, what are we going to talk about today, Dr. Webster?
Olympics.
You wish. Embryology-wise.
Embryology, okay, yeah. So... we've gone through most of the lectures now, haven't we? So we've looked at pretty much all the developing systems.
Yeah.
So I reckon we should try and tie it all together by going back to gastrulation and the germ layers and then linking those germ layers to the systems we've been talking about. To try and get a bit of cohesion between those early developmental ideas, those development principles, and all the more complicated stuff we've been talking about since. We can try and link together all those different systems and try and give the listening students a bit more of a whole view of the developing embryo. How's that?
Okay, that sounds like an excellent plan.
Yeah, okay. So, gastrulation. If you remember gastrulation, we had Well, essentially we had the two-layered disc, didn't we?
And yeah.
A bilaminar disc, which had the epiblast on top and the hyperblast underneath.
Oh, yes, I remember back that. Yeah.
So the amniotic cavity is up above the epiblast, and underneath the hyperblast is the yolk sacs with those two spaces. And it's the epiblast and hyperblast which are going to fold and pretty much form the embryo proper. In fact, the embryo is really going to be formed from the epiblast. So what happens with gastrulation is we go from those two layers, the primitive streak forms in the epiblast and lengthens down its midline. And when, of course, we get the primitive streak, suddenly we can see that what was a featureless disc now has a left and a right and a dorsal and a ventral and a cranial and a caudal directions and axes to it. So we see the patterning appear, don't we? The cells dive down through the primitive streak from the epiblast, and they push the cells of the hyperblast aside and start to differentiate, and they form, underneath the epiblast, they form the mesoderm and the endoderm. The cells of the epiblast become the ectoderm.
Right, okay, so then we have our three layers, our trilaminas.
Yeah, so we've got our cells are properly differentiated. They're on their way to becoming the systems we've been talking about, aren't they?
And then everything that develops from then on has its origin in one of those three layers.
Yeah, endoderm, ectoderm, or mesoderm. So how can we best describe what endoderm, ectoderm, and mesoderm are?
What a good question.
How can we remember them? How can we make sense of those words?
Okay, well, endo, you always think of as like central or in, do you? I do.
Yeah. Inny, isn't it?
Mm.
Endoderm kind of forms insidey stuff. But not like everything that's inside the skin. I mean, really insidey stuff, i.e. the gut tube, the cells lining the gut tube.
Yeah.
So when we looked at gut tube formation, we saw the disc, the embryo, folding over laterally to form the tube, like rolling up a bit of paper to form the gut tube.
And yeah.
The cells lining that primitive tube, that primitive gut tube, were all from the endoderm. And then, of course, the gut tube gets more complicated, and you get accessory glands and organs budding from it, like the pancreas, the gallbladder,
and your liver.
So they're all from the endoderm. They're all budding from it.
So all those things would be said to have an endodermal origin.
Yeah, that's all endoderm. So that's really insidey stuff. There's this tube running inside us, which is kind of an external surface formed from the endoderm. And the other main system was the respiratory tract, wasn't it?
Yes, because that is actually a bud from the gut tube, isn't it?
Yeah, it buds from the foregut, so it's an endoderm bud. So much of the respiratory tract is an endodermal origin. So that's a respiratory system and the gut tube, which both have external surfaces, don't they? They have the gut tube has the external, you know, stuff you eat passing through it. And the respiratory tract has air from outside in it.
Yeah, so all the lining to these tubes, all the epithelia from these tubes is endoderm, derived from endoderm. Yeah. Superb. And so do we want to say anything about those systems now? Or do you want to go on to some, you know, the ectoderm and the mesoderm layers?
Yes, do ectoderm and mesoderm. Let's talk about ectoderm, because that's simpler, isn't it? So that's then the outsidey layer. If endoderm is the insidey stuff, the ectoderm is the outsidey stuff.
Too easy.
So the ectoderm is forming the epidermis, the outermost layer of the skin.
Yep.
It's all that covering there. And when we did the neuroembryology podcast, we found that the sensory systems of very early animals were cells on the outside of the organism, because that's how they're going to sense what's outside the organism. They're going to be sat outside. In man, that has become, those cells have come together to form a nervous system, and it becomes internalized as the central nervous system and the peripheral nervous system.
Yeah.
So ectoderm is epidermis, outsidey stuff, also the nervous system for that reason, probably. And also their neural crest cells.
Ah, yes, neural crest.
Because they're part of nervous system development, but they're a bit different, aren't they?
They kind of fly everywhere. Not fly, sorry. Migrate.
Yeah, they're really handy. They become a whole list of structures. Have you got a list handy?
Yeah, I have, actually, yeah. We've got, basically, they migrate in different ways and from different levels of where they come off from the neural tube. But I mean, we know that they go towards a lot of connective tissues, bones, cartilage in the face, head and neck, because we looked at some of the pharyngeal arches, and if neural crest cells don't migrate properly there, they have all sorts of deformities.
Yeah, you get problems in development of the bones of the face and that sort of thing, don't you?
Yeah, you remember that? And also, they do develop into some cranial nerve ganglia as well. That's one for the head and neck as well, that up there. I think it's cranial nerves 5, 7, 9 and 10, actually. It ends up being the sensory ganglia for those.
Right.
Anything else? Oh, yeah. I know it's got something to do with some cells in the thyroid gland. I think it's the C cells. Or are they called parafollicular as well?
When we looked at the embryology of the endocrine system. Yeah, we
yeah,
had cells come from different origins, you know, two different origins to form single glands. And yeah, neural crest cells have an involvement there. They've got a role in tooth development as well, I think, odontoblasts.
Yeah. They're making the enamel or the dentin or something of the teeth.
Yeah, neural crest cells are also involved in the heart, in that they get involved in formation of the septa, don't they? So if you have a neural crest cell defect, you often get defects in the head and neck, and also problems with the heart.
Yeah, they're often defects.
Yep.
Correct. Oh, and some neural crest cells migrate into the skin, and they're like melanocytes.
Ooh,
so they
right,
make
yeah.
the melanin. And I think it's your hair as well, hair cells and things like that.
I think that's really weird. Melanocytes come from neural crest cells, but melanocytes are everywhere.
That is crazy.
That's really weird. Why does that come about? What? I don't get it.
I don't know, but it's cool. But also, another one, adrenal medulla.
Yeah, we looked at that, don't we? That's interesting as well, because the adrenal medulla, it's sympathetic, isn't it? It's part of the sympathetic part of the nervous system, right?
Yes.
Of the autonomic nervous system. And of course, the whole sympathetic trunk, the whole sympathetic chain is formed from neural crest cells.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got sympathetic chain, and then also we've got parasympathetic neurons as well.
And I think we've talked about that in other podcasts, but that really explains the sympathetic trunk when you look at it anatomically, if you think about neural crest cells and where they were and where they've gone to and stuff. So neural crest cells, all that stuff, those are ectoderm bits.
Genius. Cool. So,
what about other sensory stuff, like the eye, the ear?
Okay, well, they do get complicated, but essentially the eye is derived from ectoderm. Okay, there's a kind of, and it's both the ectoderm that's around the outside and some of the ectoderm that's already developed into neuroectoderm, if you like, the ectoderm that's going to be part of the nervous system.
Right.
So, yeah, the eye is ectoderm.
It's really ectodermy. I think the ear is a bit of everything, isn't it, but it's mostly mesodermy.
Yeah, the ear is a little bit complicated. You've got ectoderm invaginating on the outside. You've got endoderm coming in and lining your ear cavity, the tympanic cavity and things like that. And then you've got things like the eardrum or your tympanic membrane. That's actually got all three. It's got ectoderm on the outside, endoderm lined on the inside, and then it's got a mesodermal sort of central pit. Gets complicated, but it's absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, it helps you understand if you remember the pharyngeal arches and the cleft.
Yes, most definitely, because the ear has got a lot to do with the first and second pharyngeal arches. And actually the mesoderm from those two arches ends up making the cartilage and the bones and things like that. So.
Yeah, just for fun, we'll do a couple of podcasts on that, one on the eye, one on the ear.
Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, special sensory stuff.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be really, really interesting.
Okay, so that's endoderm and ectoderm. So are we saying then that pretty much everything else that forms from mesoderm?
Pretty much. Wow. Yeah, all the supporting structures. So that includes, you know, all your connective tissues, your bone, your cartilage, muscle,
all the
tendon,
stuff that we like
ligaments. Yeah, all that stuff. But also, one other important system that the mesoderm does create is the urogenital system. Could be two systems if you want.
Because there's a mesodermal ridge, isn't there, that both the reproductive system and the urinary system fall from.
Yeah, the intermediate mesodermal, yeah.
Yeah, so those ridge. Are really mesodermy. And you remember the somites. The somites form from paraxial mesoderm. And from there we get the vertebrae and all the muscles of the body wall and so on and so on.
And yeah, and your limbs and all that sort of stuff, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and there was... Yeah. Yeah.
Blood. So... Yeah, all blood vessels, all that kind of stuff, all ends up coming.
So then a lot of structures are made up of all three layers, or maybe a couple of layers, like the epithelium is, we said that the epidermis is from ectoderm, but all the stuff underneath it must be from mesoderm then, all the connected tissue-y stuff. And
exactly. Yeah. That's going back to the somites, and remember the dermatome, and the myotome, the dermatome, and the sclerotome. So the dermatome is derived from mesoderm, and that's going to go towards the dermis of the skin. Yeah, and the ectoderm is the epidermis. Brilliant, really.
And when we looked at the rectum, part of that came from the ectoderm, and part of it was formed from gut tubes. There's a mix of ectoderm and endoderm there.
Exactly. And then when you think of the digestive system, got to remember that there's for the peristaltic movement and all that kind of stuff that's going on, it's got surrounding muscle and connective tissues and things like that. And they're actually derived from mesoderm. So the digestive system has got endoderm, lining, mesoderm, connective tissues, and ectoderm at the distal part of the anal canal. So it's got everything in there.
And the neural crest cells from the ectoderm take part in forming some of the autonomic nervous stuff around the gut tube. So there's ectoderm there as well.
Exactly, yeah.
So we're not saying it gets complicated, but remember the basic rules of ectoderm, endoderm, and mesoderm, what they form. Just be aware of how they link together. I mean, what about the respiratory tract as well? Because that's endoderm lined, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's a lot of cartilage in the trachea and in
smooth muscles.
So then you've got a lot of mesoderm derived stuff as well. So it's not entirely clear cut, but those ideas help you understand the systems.
Yeah, and then the urogenital system we're talking about, we're saying pretty much is derived from mesoderm, but you've got to remember that there is some endoderm there as well. You've got the development of the bladder and the urethra are both lined with endodermal epithelia.
Yeah, yeah.
And the germ cells migrate from the yolk sac.
Yes. So the thing is here that we've got ectoderm, endoderm and mesoderm, but we're trying to get you, the listener, the student, to try to link together all the different parts of embryology, try and link together the ideas of ectoderm, endoderm and mesoderm, and try and link together the different systems that we've talked about, and don't keep it compartmentalised, and it'll help you understand the development of the embryo as a whole, I think. It certainly helps me to think of it that way, start linking things together.
Right? Yes, brilliant.
Cool. So on that, I think that's us covered for that, isn't it?
Yeah, short and sweet.
Covered everything we wanted to do. And next time we'll do, what should we do, the eye?
The eye. I found a nice little 1982 introductory paper, so I'll go and read that again.
Cool, okay. Well, thanks.
All right, no problem. I'd just like to give a shout out to Rafael Nadal, who won the tennis in the Olympics. Well done, Rafa.
Does he listen to this podcast?
Yeah, he does.
Probably.
Soon, one day, and he's number one now. So, yeah,
I'll make sure to tag Rafael Nadal in the iTunes bit. The keywords and stuff. So what are you doing now then? You still unboxing, or?
Am I still what?
Unboxing.
Oh, no, well, we're mostly done. Anything that's still in boxes isn't being used. Robin's a bit of a hard taskmaster, so we were pretty much unpacked in 2 days. So just chill out and relax, huh?
Offer a surf, is it?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, very nice. All right, cheers, Ree.
Thanks, Swansea.
See you again soon.
Yeah, bye-bye.
To our listeners.